Welcome to Funnel Hacker Radio Podcast, where we go behind the scenes and uncover the tactics and strategies top entrepreneurs are using to make more sales, dominate their markets, and how you can get those same results. Here is your host, Dave Woodward.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Funnel Hacker Radio. I'm your host, Dave Woodward. Today, you're going to love this opportunity because we have the opportunity of actually having Frank Porcillo on the phone with us. Frank actually is an attorney, and this is a guy you would think I would normally never have on a podcast dealing with funnels, but I met Frank just a couple weeks ago and thought, you know what, he's got such amazing content for small business owners. He specializes in working with online business owners, primarily protecting them against SEC, and I thought, man, we've got people who are doing a ton of transactions, multi-million dollars through funnels online, and I thought having Frank on would be just an amazing opportunity. So Frank, welcome to the call.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Again, I really, really appreciate you taking the time to do this. This is going to be really a lot of fun, and I promise everybody we'll keep this really entertaining and light. But it's a topic that a lot of people screw up. And so I wanted to make sure, I think the way this actually came about, I think we were at LaunchCon together, weren't we? Was it just a couple weeks ago where
yeah.
we were talking?
Yeah, we met at the booth right outside.
It was funny because I literally just gotten a phone call from a good buddy of mine. He's like, Dave, listen, I'm in a situation with a JV partner. It's not going well. Do you have anybody you could refer me to? And I was literally just talking to Frank. I said, you know what? The guy's standing right in front of me. And so after that, I thought, we need to make sure that more people have access to Frank and what he's got going. So I wanted to really kind of just dive in. And Frank, if you don't mind, take just a few minutes here real quick and help people understand what are some of the things as an online business owner legally they need to be looking at.
Right. Well, I guess just a quick little background. So the main government agency that's going to be regulating all this is called the FTC, or the Federal Trade Commission, and they're the main consumer protection agency of the U.S. government. I'm going to try to keep this as fun as possible and try not to get bored down by the legal terms, so stop me if I get a little bit lawyerly. But essentially, what they're looking for is truth in advertising. And that can go anywhere from the claims that you make in your sales letters to advertising properly that you have recurring billing cycles. I know a lot of us like to have like that monthly or yearly subscription service. And then also just making sure you have proper privacy policies and disclaimers. And we'll talk about some high-profile cases with some people and companies that we all know about that kind of gotten sticky situations. So there's really a lot and way more than we could ever go through in this conversation, but I'm going to try to just focus on the main things. So the first thing that I think that we should talk about are just disclaimers. And this really goes to the claims you make in advertising. We all want our sales letters to be as compelling as possible so that our buyers will be impelled to call to action, click on the link, and make a purchase. And so we'll talk about claims and the benefits of our products. And a lot of us will use testimonials. But what's important to note is that, first and foremost, if you're going to use testimonials and it isn't if it's more of an atypical or someone who really excelled at your product that's making that or excelled using your service that's making that claim, you want to make sure that there's some sort of disclaimer saying either in the ad page, like, this is someone who really took this material and ran with it rather than you're automatically guaranteed to get these results. Do you know what I mean?
That makes complete sense.
Yeah. Another thing, I mean, and this is something that came up when I was actually talking to your friend, is having those recurring billing themes. And when you're going to have recurring billing, you need to make that as obvious to the customer as possible. I think one of the issues that a lot of people ran into was they didn't advertise up front that it was a recurring billing, it was a monthly or a yearly subscription. And the consumers only found out after they made the purchase or sometimes not until they got billed again. That's actually illegal. And if you get caught doing that, you will face massive fines. I think the minimum fine by the FTC if you're found guilty of a violation is about $16,000. So already it's far more money than the cost of having someone look over your stuff.
So what are some of the main things that person needs to be? I mean, obviously we always talk about testimonials and stuff. The majority of most people's testimonials, usually those people who actually ended up using the product and had success, which
Right.
is a huge caveat to actually making success with any product that you use. But I
Right.
mean, if they had success from it, what separates them from being an anomaly versus just, listen, if anybody goes through and they actually implement everything I say, they're going to get this kind of result.
Yeah, that's a tough thing, and even for us lawyers, it's always a case by case thing. So, the advice or the information that I'm giving here, if you're not going to have a lawyer look over everything, and you want to use your best judgment, so we all know more about our products than anybody else, and we know what results to expect, and we use the best testimonials that we get. And you don't have to say that this person got great results with my product, but you shouldn't expect it. That you don't have to do that. You don't have to sort of self-sabotage. What you should say is something along the lines of, this person dedicated themselves to using the product. They followed it step by step, and this is the results that they got. And I know that's kind of, splitting hairs a little bit, but just really to give you an idea of what the FTC is looking at when they're examining your advertisements. One of the other things to keep in mind is this is all relatively new territory. Up until recently, the Federal Trade Commission wasn't really cracking down on the small guys. Like, if you're only doing six figures or low seven figures per year, the FTC wasn't too concerned with you. But due to the recent boom in internet activity, so many people starting online businesses, they've really taken a new and pretty unique approach to it. Anyone who advertises using fake Facebook advertising will kind of know what I mean when I talk about the FTC using lookalike audiences to crack down. And what that means is they'll find someone who is big in their industry or in their niche, who is engaging in practices that are against the law or against the rules and regulations set forth by the FTC. And then what they'll do is they'll go deeper into that niche. They'll basically do what internet marketers do to find their own niche, and that is go deeper. And they'll find people who are similar to this one person, and they'll drag them all into a lawsuit. And the worst thing that could ever happen to your business, especially if you're just starting out, is to get dragged into a lawsuit with the FTC.
So what are the steps that someone needs to do to avoid that? I mean, no one wants to get involved in that. Obviously, at the same time as marketers, we tend to push things not black and white, but maybe somewhat a little grayish at times, or at least, I mean, I know from our standpoint at ClickFunnels, one of the main things we get hit up with a lot is, people saying, oh, someone, it's copyright infringement. They can't use my name. They can't use my pictures on their funnel. Or, I mean, I get a lot of that kind of stuff coming in, but I'm always curious as far as what's the FTC really most concerned about? Is it claims? Is it primarily claims? Is that the main thing they're looking at? What other things are they most concerned about?
Well, believe it or not, the FCC is a complaint-driven organization. So your best bet to avoiding any interaction with the FTC is having absolutely outstanding customer service. The way that they find a lot of people, and the reason why the biggest people are the ones who get caught first, is because they are the biggest and tend to generate the most complaints. The more complaints that you have up against you, the more likely the FTC is to investigate you. And
I'm
people
going
will
to
generally,
interrupt you real
yeah.
quick here because
Oh, sure.
we literally, that's the one thing I can tell you that, obviously, we're not the FTC, but it's interesting for me. If there's a complaint that we get from customers who end up calling us, is because the funnel that they bought through has no customer service. And so then they see our little ClickFunnels badge at the bottom and they think it's us that's their customer service. And so they contact us. So I can't express the importance of making sure that when you're selling a product, you need to have some way for your customers to respond to you in some way. I don't care. It doesn't need to be a phone number, but you have to at least have email support or something where a person can get a hold of you. I think that's really a great comment. I appreciate you mentioning that.
Yeah, and not only having it, but having it, responding in a timely manner. For example,
I get it.
You know what
You're
I mean?
Right.
We've all dealt with terrible customer service before, and we've also all dealt with great customer service. I mean, I just had a customer for another one of my business send us in a request saying that they didn't mean to purchase the product or they didn't want it or whatever it was. And within an hour, we had a response out there. We had a full refund given, and we said keep the product anyway. And our goal, because we know we want to keep the complaints away, is to make them as happy as possible. So don't give anybody an excuse to file a complaint against you, because only bad things will happen to it. So that's number one. Number two is, if you get big enough, people will make complaints anyway. That's just the cost of doing business as you continue to grow. And I guess now would be a good time to talk about the high-profile cases, because I think that really hammers down the point, and you can take away some things that those people did or didn't do that you can kind of implement into your own business. The first person is Frank Kern, and I'm sure most people involved in internet marketing have at least heard of Frank Kern. He was sued in 2003, and he writes all about it. He has a blog post. You just Google Frank Kern, what it's like to get sued by the FTC, and he'll give it to you from his experience as an internet marketer and what it was like going through it for him. Basically, what he was doing in that situation was he bought a bunch of books in which he had the resale rights to, and he bundled all these books together and sold them as a package. I think it was called Internet Marketing Empire or something like that. When you bought these bundles from him, you also purchased resale rights and the rights to use a sales letter that he used that had his name in it. Now, this kind of shady company started using his information, and they were harassing people with calls and offering coaching services and saying that they worked with Frank Kern, even though they didn't. And they wound up getting a ton of complaints. And the FTC filed suit against Frank Kern and not this other company because they kept using his name. And so even though Frank wasn't involved in that at all, other than the fact that he sold it, he still wound up getting dragged into this lawsuit. And he wound up spending over $100,000 in legal fees. And he originally thought that he was protected because he had his family's tax lawyer look over his website. Now, there are a million different kinds of lawyers for a reason. There's too much of the law for any one attorney to know about. So the first lesson to take away there is, if you are going to hire an attorney, make sure it's an experienced internet attorney. And the second thing to take away is that it drives home the point that the FTC really is a complaint-driven company, because they had all these complaints against this other company that was using Frank Kern's name, but they still sued Frank Kern and not the other company. Now, Frank was really big at the time, so he was able to withstand it. For a lot of us, it would crush us. The second thing brings me to the point of privacy policies. And there was a Snapchat recently just had a settlement with the FTC, which is why it's on my mind. So Snapchat, as we all know, is you send a picture and it's supposedly deleted forever after a certain period of time. And Snapchat had this privacy policy on their page essentially saying that. The problem was that the snaps weren't actually deleted. There were ways that hackers could come in and retrieve people's snaps. And I think there was that whole scandal, you know, about a year or so ago with the nude pictures of celebrities being released. And a lot of those were taken off of other people's phones or Snapchat or stuff like that. Most people think, oh, I have a privacy policy, and as long as the privacy policy is in place, I am protected. I can't get sued. The complaints will have no weight against me. That's true to an extent. The real truth of the matter is you can have a privacy policy, but if it doesn't do exactly what you say it's supposed to do, then that puts you on the hook. So Snapchat, and I'll try to word this a little bit differently to show you what I mean, but there are things that you could not be liable for, but you are because you decided to put that in your privacy policy. You know what I mean? Like, nobody ever expected pictures to be deleted until Snapchat invented that service. But once they said that, once they said your pictures are deleted, then they have an obligation to the customer to do what they say we're going to do. And when that wound up not being the case, the FTC stepped in and sued them. They wound up settling for, I think it was undisclosed. What I'm hearing is rumors of, you know, in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, plus who knows how much money they had to spend on lawyers. So if you are using privacy policies, make sure you do what your policies say. So look over them or have an attorney go look over your privacy policy and make sure it's accurate. Because if your privacy policy isn't accurate, if you don't follow it to the exact key of what it's going to do, then you're opening up a can of worms for yourself.
Well, how much does the privacy policy cost and where do people get them? Because I can tell you, I've seen a ton of people that literally just go in and copy and swipe someone else's privacy policy and then do a quick word search, change out the names and call it good. I mean, what?
Yeah.
How long does it have to be? Obviously,
it's really
the main thing Snapchat has got just sued for or brought into the case was they introduced a term basically that no one else has ever done before. So are you better off having less stuff or more stuff, or how's that work?
Well, this is an answer that most people will probably hate, but the answer is that it really depends. It depends on the business that you're doing and what guarantees you want to make to your customers. Sometimes the privacy policy is the whole basis of your business, just like it was with Snapchat. If you think about it, the whole basis of their business is that the snaps disappear after a certain amount of time. So there are guarantees that every business wants to be able to make to their customers. And if you can afford an attorney, then I would go find an attorney. It'll cost you a couple thousand dollars, but a few thousand dollars is a lot less than a few hundred thousand dollars in the long term, especially if you really intend on growing your business. So for that specific question, I would say your best bet is to consult an attorney. There are companies out there that are in the process of creating some products. I am one of those people. We are working on creating a sort of blueprint of language that you can use if you're just starting out and you want to avoid the cost of an attorney. Sort of like a placeholder until you can grow your business to a different size. When that comes to fruition, I'll try to make the CodeFunnels community aware of that. But right now, we're just in sort of the research and creation mode of trying to find some language that can generally fit in most businesses.
Because I can tell you, most people aren't going to spend a couple thousand dollars on an attorney until it's probably too late.
Exactly.
I know the community too well. I know most people when they're getting started in a business are like, the least of my concerns is the privacy policy and the terms of service. So let's worry about that later. Let's go sell something first.
Yeah, the old adage is an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of the cure. And when it comes to the law, that is incredibly true because you have to start paying litigation attorneys or they start charging you $400, $500 an hour. You're in deep trouble.
So what are the other things people need to be aware of when they're starting their business online?
I'd actually like to go back to truth in advertising. Because I really do think that that's the most important thing for people. And we talked about disclaimers a little bit. There's a little bit more to it. There's a company that I was just reading about called Akaiberry. They're promoting to lose 50 pounds in 4 weeks. And, you know, they had all this language up saying that this certain product is created for weight loss and you can lose this much money in this amount of time. The whole thing turned out to be a whole load of crap. And they had this disclaimer on their page that said, don't expect these results. They're not typical. And they thought that that would protect them. The problem was, you can't do that. That's not how disclaimers work. So if anyone out there was thinking about using disclaimers to sort of take a shortcut around the law, that's not how they work. You can't. You can't do that. So you can't make ridiculous claims and then say, well, not really, in your disclaimer. If you, for example, I have the FTC language in front of me, and I'll try to break it down into layman's terms, give you a better idea. So you, as an advertiser, you are responsible for ensuring that every claim that you make that is either expressly made, as in you say it directly, or implied, that would lead a reasonable consumer to believe that it was truthful and a substantiated claim, you have to be able to back that up. We've all come across tons of ads that's for products that say they're going to do something that they don't really do. And these companies, you know, sometimes they fly under the radar. But everything that you say that your product's going to do, it better do, or you better have some evidence to back up that it can do that if you put it to the test. Because just throwing in that disclaimer saying, well, not really, it doesn't really work like that, it doesn't work. It doesn't fly with the FTC. So anything that might be considered misleading, even if you just think about jewelry for a second, jewelers are actually forced. It's actually, you wouldn't think of it as a disclaimer, but it is. If they say it's imitation pearl, let's say you buy a pearl necklace with imitation pearl. Imitation is actually the disclaimer. And so they say they're selling pearls, but imitation is the disclaimer. And another thing about where you want to put your disclaimers, and you want to put them close to the ad. So I talked about how a pearl could be the trigger, while imitation would be the disclaimer. If you're having testimonials and you feel like you want to put a disclaimer to that testimonial saying this is someone who really did an exceptionally well job with the program, you can just put a little asterisk right next to it saying, this is someone who did an exceptional job with the program. And you want it to be close. A disclaimer 2 pages away probably wouldn't be considered sufficient.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, Frank, I appreciate this content's been fantastic, and I really appreciate it. Again, I know it's one of those things no one really wants to pay attention to, kind of like what you were mentioning as far as prevention versus actually trying to defend it later. And I think as we kind of get close to wrapping things up here, I know one of the main things people are going to want to find out is how do they get more information on something like this, and what's the easiest way of reaching out to you? So if they want to do that, how should they get a hold of you?
All right. Well, anyone here in the Funnel Hacker community, I am a fellow hacker myself, so I'm always happy to answer questions. You can reach out to me via my email, and that email is F as in Frank, J as in Joseph, P as in Peter, ESQ as in the shorthand for Esquire. So that's FJPESQ@gmail.com.
And Frank, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I do have a disclaimer of my own that I am legally required to add to this conversation.
You're an attorney, you would have to.
yeah, exactly. I actually probably should have said it in the beginning of this conversation, but I'll at least get it out now. So as Dave said, I am an attorney and I do specialize in this stuff. However, everything that I am providing here for you guys today is information, and it shouldn't be considered as personal legal advice. There hasn't been an attorney-client relationship created. Same goes for any questions I answer via email. If you do live in the state of New York, I am qualified to act as legal representation, but for anybody outside of the state of New York, I am only allowed to give you information, and I can also help you find an attorney in your state or that's close by you that can help you get the help, the services that you need. So that's my little disclaimer.
I think that's awesome. So as an attorney, do you have to pretty much disclaim everything you say and do throughout your daily life?
The law is not black and white. It's gray. So sometimes I find myself, sending text messages like, oh, by the way, this is not legal advice. It's just information.
I should start trying to do that for my wife. This isn't really legit, but just for your information, sweetie. Frank, I really appreciate your time today, bud. Thank you so very much. Any parting words you want to tell people?
Sorry, what was that?
Any parting words you want to share with people before we hang up?
Yeah, make sure you get your stuff together. I'm not kidding about this stuff. It will cost you, it cost Frank Kern over $100,000 in legal fees, and he wound up not even fighting it. He wound up settling, so he had to pay $100,000 in fees, plus I think a $250,000 settlement or something like that. So, and if he would have just had an internet attorney go through all this stuff, it wouldn't have cost him, 10% of all that. So, really, I know you don't want to spend the money. I know it's annoying to think about, but protect yourself as much as you can. It will really benefit you in the long run.
Frank, thanks so much, bud. Appreciate your time.
All right, thank you. It was great being here.
Thanks for listening to Funnel Hacker Radio Podcast. If you'd like to be notified anytime we release a new episode, just subscribe over at funnelhackerradio.com. In addition to that, we'd love to send you a free gift. You can find that free gift at funnelhackerradio.com/free trial. One last thing is we love giving away cars. So if you'd like access to a free dream car, all you have to do is go to funnelhackerradio.com/dream car and you'll get all the details. Thanks again for listening.